Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading.
Hello, today is episode 8. I am Ryan Basor, and I am excited to be able to introduce and have on as a guest my good friend Rick Thompson. Rick, thanks for being on the show today.
Ryan, I'm proud to be here with you and the crew today.
Thank you. I want to go ahead and introduce my wonderful co-hosts, starting off with Tom Beller over at Real Leaf Solution. What's happening up north, Tom?
It's a beautiful day up here, Ryan. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's nice down here in Lansing as well. Sam Rosinski over at Fresh Coast, also up in Kalkaska. What's going on, Sam?
Hey, Ryan. Happy to speak again. Happy to be on the show.
Good. And as always, Kevin Pybus over at True Cannabis down here in Lansing with me. What's up today, Kevin?
Well, same old, Ryan. Just ready to kick it up. Bye.
All right. Well, as always, we like to dig into a little bit of Michigan marijuana history, and luckily so far all our guests have been a part of it, and none as much, or I guess you could say, put them right up there with anybody, as Rick Thompson. So I met Rick in 2009. I was an insurance agent and was trying to insure cannabis businesses and was a caregiver already and was getting into it, and I met him down at Big Daddy's in Oak Park, and he was running the MMR magazine, the Michigan Medical Marijuana magazine, and we started working together. I quit that career. Rick and I were in Cannabis Patients United together, Michigan Association of Compassion Centers. We started the Compassion Chronicles together, an online news source that we did before I went into prison, and that was a lot of fun. Also, MI Legalized, Prop 1. And Rick also just importantly helped me launch Redemption with a great set of videos and interviewing these guys that are actually on the show with me. So, Rick, you're into a lot of things, have a lot of titles and a lot of hats. With that, I'll be quiet. Why don't you kind of tell us about yourself and what you're doing now, and we'll get into some questions.
Well, thanks very much, Ryan. I appreciate that little history of us together. It's kind of nice to remember all the different things that we've done in the past.
I left some out, too.
Well, you know what? That's the thing about big stories, is that there's always more to it. And your story is about as big as life, right? And my story is slightly smaller than yours, but right now, currently, I'm doing the Michigan Cannabis Business Development Group. I've been doing that since 2015. We specialize in small business seminars surrounding the cannabis space. I've done 11 different seminars in Michigan since 2015. Most everybody on this show has been to one of my programs, really kind of a victim of the COVID crisis. We certainly can't have internal, meetings with 300 people like we did before. So just continuing to move around the industry and survive if I have over the last 10 years. I've published a couple magazines. We've done some advocacy with Michigan Normal, currently with the on the board of directors of Michigan Normal, as well as on the executive committee of the Cannabis Caucus of the Michigan Democratic Party. And in my role as one of the leaders of the Cannabis Caucus, I was fortunate enough to be able to interview our Attorney General for the state of Michigan, Dana Nessel. That interview happened just a few days ago, Friday of last week, less than 7 days ago. And that was quite revelatory. It was good. Thank you. She was very forthcoming. This was actually the second meeting that we'd had with the Attorney General. The first one was a private meeting between myself and two other leaders from the Cannabis Caucus and the AG. So we had already spoken to her on some of the subjects and we had communicated, but it was important to us to make sure that we provided a framework for dialogue to take place between average citizens and the people at the top of leadership in the state government. And we were able to do that, and I'm very proud of it. And I'm also very proud of all of the honesty and the raw answers that she provided during that interview. Ryan, I take it that you listened to the interview, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
I did, and it was great. I mean, that's you're right on the story. I mean, I left off us working to help elect the Attorney General of Michigan together. That was a pretty big deal too. So, you know, I'm refreshed on her attitude, especially in the last couple months. She seems to really be stepping up and on some cannabis issues, but also, you know, other campaign promises. But I feel like she's there to listen, and you know, she believes in it. The good thing for that too is it's also a, for now in the world we live in, it's a political winner. So I feel like it's, you know, what a big move getting Dana in there over Bill Schuette, who we never had access to, and if we did, we wouldn't have liked what he said. So, a great interview, Rick. It's great. And that actually was going to be my first question. You know, like, tell me a little bit. I actually don't know that much about it. I've been, you know, out of the loop on this end, but. How'd you get involved with the Democratic Cannabis Caucus, what you guys are doing? And then I know these other guys are itching to ask you some questions.
Well, first of all, let me just clarify a little bit more sharply what you just said about Dana Nessel. Although we were instrumental in helping Dana Nessel beat her opponent in the primary, the real disaster, or almost disaster, came in the general election. Dana Nessel won by a point, maybe a point and a half. It was a really tight race. Very, very tight.
She got outspent 7-1 by Tom Leonard, and that's never, I don't think that's ever happened where someone's been outspent like that in a race in Michigan and won. So there's a lot of firsts with that.
It sure was.
Amazing.
And that small margin of victory, in no possible way can you imagine the cannabis community wasn't responsible for that. Although she had support amongst the LGBT community, the cannabis support was really prevalent, especially evident at the Democratic Party and then also in campaigning for her. But as far as my involvement in the Michigan Democratic Party's Cannabis Caucus, as things oftentimes happen, I had a friend who was in the Cannabis Caucus and said, you know, I really wish you'd participate in this. And I stopped by to take a look at what they were doing, virtually, of course, because it's in the middle of COVID. I liked what I saw, and I decided to join. This was a year ago. That was at the Michigan Democratic Party's, 2 years ago, convention, when we got Dana Nessel to beat, you know, Pat Miles. At that point, the Cannabis Caucus had a meeting, and they were calling for leaders and asking for people to step up. And because I was at that meeting and I stepped to the front of the room, I became a congressional district number 5 representative on the Cannabis Caucus. And then fast forward 2 years later to this year, where I've ascended to a new role, which is the chair of the Elections Committee of the Cannabis Caucus, as well as retaining my position as congressional district 5 representative too. So the Cannabis Caucus itself contains a lot of notable figures. Zahra Abbas has been an advocate for several years, and she's been featured in a lot of publications because of her particular illness and how well cannabis worked for that. Jamie Lowell is a friend of ours, of course, for many, many years. As long as I've known you, I've known Jamie. Yep. And he's also a member of the Cannabis Caucus, too. Mike McCurdy's on there, too. Mike Whitty, sometimes known as Dr. Detroit, who's a fixture in Democratic politics here in Michigan. Mike Whitty's also on board. Leah Sklar, Denise Kirchhoff. We have a lot of folks with skills and with abilities that are part of that group.
Hey, Rick. This is Sam over at Fresh Coast. I mean, you got your hand in a lot of cookie jars here. And some of the questions that I had were surrounding some of the new legislation that's about to surface here. You know, I know we've got a couple of pieces of legislation right now in the state. Where do you see those? Well, first, you want to just go in and describe those. And second, how do you see those impacting small businesses?
Well, there's proposed legislation, and then there's already introduced legislation. The biggest package of already introduced legislation is the group of expungement bills, which is already passed through the House of Representatives, passed out of Senate committee, and still sits on the floor of the Senate waiting for a vote. Now, of course, we're in favor of improved expungement bills. However, the cannabis portion of this expungement bill falls far short of our expectations. It does not expunge issues that are currently made legal here in the state of Michigan, and that was the purpose of it. It also doesn't provide for automatic expungements, which just amplifies the difficulty people already have using a system that people describe as being broken. So it could be better, but that's the most prominent group. Another bill was just recently introduced. In fact, it just had a hearing yesterday, and that is a bill in the Senate which would require cannabis companies registered through the MMFLA and presumably the MRTMA by extension to retain additional insurance and provide additional proofs, including a $100,000 proof of payment of some kind for a insurance policy that would cover things like your employees licking joints. That's specifically the thing that they've described as motivating that particular bill.
You do see that in places like Ohio. They're called surety bonds. I mean, in some regulated states, you see it even as, you know, deficits and, you know, consistent supplies that they can docket people for. So I think it's an added insurance policy that we're seeing in there. Another thing that I'm noticing that's weaponizing finances for some of these smaller outfits that are out there. So I know that's something that the MICIA is trying to protect at least the small guys for. And I guess what's your position on that particular piece of legislation?
Well, in my opinion, I don't think we should be amending the MRTMA or the MMFLA at a point when there's so much other dynamism contained within the industry right now. Let's face it, the Marijuana Regulatory Agency on their own is counting up the new regs every month, sometimes every week. It's difficult enough for cannabis companies to be able to roll with the changes that we've got right now, considering all the different pressures that are on the industry at this particular time. I also think this is the wrong constitution of legislators to be making change to the cannabis industry at this point. We have a Republican-dominated House and a Republican-dominated Senate, and our experience in Michigan over the last 12 years is that sometimes the things that come out of the Republican-dominated legislatures are not favorable for the consumer of cannabis. Now, as much of a business advocate as I am, I've been considered by many to be Michigan's cannabis consumer advocate for many years, and that's really what my focus is. So I want to make sure that we have people that can make money at their particular business while also ensuring that we have safe situations for consumers. I don't see requiring cannabis companies to have a larger insurance policy, even though they already have the option to do that themselves. I don't see that as being a productive use of legislative time.
And so with the general elections coming up here, I mean, is there an importance for our demographics to go out and vote? I mean, where do you see this being placed on as far as a level of importance on this upcoming election season?
Well, here's what I'd like to tell all of your listeners is that as much as I want you to vote, I want everybody to vote. Vote your conscience. Vote whatever you need to do. Get out November 3rd and vote. Stay active after November 3rd. Our history here in Michigan has shown us that when a group of people loses power, they like to grab as much change as they can in something called the lame duck session. Now, a lame duck session is that period of legislative activity that happens after the election is over and we know the results, but before the end of their session, usually about 3 to 4 weeks of intensive legislative screwery, to be nice to your listeners. And in this particular instance, it's believed that there'll be several things of a cannabis nature that are probably likely to be introduced during this year's lame duck session, including potentially increasing the excise tax, which I think would be
Just heard about that today. You want to get into that?
Yeah, let's talk about the possible reasons why someone would want to increase the excise tax. Realize that a 10% excise tax is probably the lowest excise tax we have in the United States, except for, I think, Oklahoma. When we start talking about the advantages that brings, that means we're kicking the black market in the teeth to a certain degree. Because we have a low excise tax, we're recruiting more people out of the black market to come into the regulated market and support those cannabis businesses. Now, I don't advocate for an end of the black market. That's generational. It's unlikely to change for one or two generations at least, but we do still want to make it an attractive opportunity for people to use all of their options, including the regulated market, both on a medical and on a recreational standpoint. If you increase the tax, even a subtle increase in tax, it's going to be extremely negative to the response people have. That's a proposed, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5%. Who knows what they're going to come up with? The second thing is what they're potentially earmarking that tax money for. Now, I don't have this officially, but birds that I have flying around places tell me that this might potentially be earmarked to go to pay law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Now, what we did when we drafted the language of Proposal 1 was we corrected many of the problems with the MMFLA. The whole, you're immediately illegal if you harvest your 12 plants because you have more than 2.5 ounces. We did away with that. A lot of other things, too. One of the things we did away with was paying cops from cash generated through the cannabis industry. In the MFLA program, they had several different ways in which police agencies benefited from the tax dollars that were collected. We eliminated the tax dollars when the legalization proposal went online, but then we also made sure that the tax revenue that we generated was specifically designated for certain recipients. Now, in order for the cops to get paid, they would have to increase the tax, and then they would have to designate those funds to go directly to the police. That's not what we intended. That's not what the voters voted for. And I'm afraid that if we have a lame duck session where there's a frenzy of bills that are being thrown at the lawmakers in order for them to vote on, which is what happens every year, and in lame duck, there's usually no opportunity for public input or reduced opportunity for public input, which means they don't get to hear from us as much as they should. That's the time that they'll do some of the worst and most sinister of changes, the things they could never do in a regular session because the people would rise up with torches and come knock on their door. So that's what we've seen in Michigan's history regarding cannabis law reform, and that's my biggest fear. So in an election year like this, I want you to vote for the general election on November 3rd and vote down ticket and vote all of the non-partisan ballot proposals you do. But make sure that you stay engaged after the election and watch your news, because some of the stuff is going to happen. It's going to come fast and furious. That was a lot of talking. That was a lot of talking, guys.
No, it's all good. It's all good. You know, one of the things, you know, we wanted to hear about as well is your take on Michael Thompson. You're involved in it. We've talked a little bit about it on the show. But what's, I know you talked to Dane about it. What's the update on that? And then I know Tom and Kevin have a couple questions for you.
Now, the Michael Thompson update is actually more clear now than it's been at any time during his incarceration. Last week, the parole board had a hearing, and a preliminary hearing, which was a necessary step before they can actually vote on the petition for clemency that was submitted on behalf of his attorney, by his attorney on his behalf. That vote is supposed to take place on September 11th. If it does, then there's a 90-day period after that vote to allow for crime victims, prosecutors, or other interested parties to protest the decision made by the parole board. After that 90-day period, if there are no protests, or if the protests are resolved within that period, then the governor is capable of giving clemency at that point. So that potentially gives us a time frame that could end up with, you know, late November, December, perhaps January, of having that time period finished. The real concern that we have is that the parole board's not going to honor the request to vote on that on September 11th, and that they would bump it a little bit further. Because we've got the attorney general's involvement, and it seems perhaps some gubernatorial support as well, it looks like maybe the parole board's under a lot of pressure to get this one right. And if that's the case, we could see this guy popped out of jail by the end of this year, which is an amazing feat. And it's not just us in Michigan. I mean, Ryan, I know you've been talking to Last Prisoner Project, and you have connections, and you have connections in places in Lansing that are very well placed. But this has been a national focus. We've seen motion picture stars. We've seen music icons using the hashtag Free Michael Thompson. Jim Belushi, the famed actor and comedian who started his own cannabis business, which is just awesome. He's on the board of directors of Last Prisoner Project, and he's been speaking out about it. He has a brand new podcast that's only had two episodes published. And in the second episode, he talked about Michael. So we are receiving some support nationally for this guy here in Michigan, and on a level that I think a lot of people weren't sure was possible anymore. Once we got legalization, a lot of people dropped their advocacy. They thought, all right, mission accomplished, and they just sat back in the recliner and watched old Seinfeld episodes or something. I don't know. We're missing some soldiers in the war, and that really makes it more difficult for us to win battles. But it looks like this one is one we might win.
Yeah, that kind of leads to my next question. I mean, that's amazing, and that's a first step, but you know, we have a much larger problem with these incarcerations for cannabis offenses that on a broader scale, that we were under the assumption and told that there would be some serious conversations about expungement. Where are we sitting currently with that status?
So let me, I'll tell you a little bit about the conversation we had with the Attorney General previously. Before our appointment to have the first conversation with the AG, which was a private one, we'd asked for a particular list, a list of people that were currently incarcerated in Michigan for cannabis crimes, and they gave us a list of 15 people. Guess whose name was not on it? Michael Thompson. We said, hey, look up this guy, because that's not there. They've decided now that that list that they had of only 15 people has to be expanded, and they have to open up the different parameters by which they're defining people incarcerated for cannabis crimes. So we're anticipating a renewed list being received from the Attorney General. They just confirmed that they will be sending us one. So that helps us out to identify who's still in jail and for what. And then we need to decide which people we want to focus on as far as the ones most likely to be released. Although someone who's recently been incarcerated may have been unjustly so, someone who's already served a significant portion of their sentence is more likely to get that clemency from the governor or to be released by the parole board than someone who hasn't served hardly any time at all. So we have to select who's best for us to advocate for and then work towards getting them all done. But the other thing is working with our national partners like Last Prisoner Project, making our list available to them so that the resources they have available can be brought to bear on the things, sometimes maybe even ones that we're not focused on. We may be focused on two different groups of people, but that's great. That just means more people get help.
So it's as simple as just going back and looking at people that are serving time for non-violent cannabis crimes and say, okay, they're over 21. They were, you know, if there's a certain limit, right, 2.5 ounces or whatever, you know, can't there be a mass expungement, or is this just has to be on a case-to-case basis? Because it seems like that's a really daunting task and could take quite a bit of time, and especially if people are serving time unjustly, that seems, it just seems like even more like a slap in the face in some ways.
Well, an expungement, of course, is release of past records. What we're talking about is releasing people from current incarceration. I think that's what you're referring to, Tom. Yep. In Illinois, the governor was able to use their law in order to do some stuff of that nature. I'm told by the experts, which I am not, that that's not possible under Michigan's system. That's why the governor wasn't able to give clemency to Michael Thompson as soon as she heard about his case, because the procedure requires this pathway through the parole board. This is just a remnant of a time when, through the drug war, they made it difficult for people to get out of jail for cannabis crimes and for other drug crimes. This is some of the things people have been struggling with for years, and we still have these rights yet to fix.
Removing these barriers, or is this anything, those types of issues that you're talking about there, are those things that are being discussed as far as, hey, removing some of these paths in order to kind of expedite the process?
You know, I'd like to say yes, because I know people are sympathetic to that situation, but considering all the other things going on right now in Michigan, I'm not sure what's at the top of their list. I know the Attorney General just received a win in an Enbridge situation, issued an opinion in another case. There's child trafficking going on. So I'm not sure where their focus is. That's why we as citizen groups, we can be singularly focused and devote our time towards accomplishing some of these things. Because government, one thing we've known about them for a long time, they let us down sometimes. So we have to be there to pick our fellow man up when the government's not there for them. And then when it comes to freeing cannabis prisoners, that's one of those battles we've picked up.
Yeah, Rick, no, that's something, you know, all of us on here, Tom's wife, Krista, is on the advisory panel for Redemption Foundation, and I didn't say that at the beginning. You're on that as well, and all this stuff that we're talking about, and you're excited to have you as part of it, as an asset to already be working on this stuff, filling us in and working on all these issues that, you know, like you said, there's a lot of big stuff going on in the world, and we gotta be loud and active still, or it's, you know, it's not gonna get done.
Well, Corona took some of our tools away. It took away our legitimate ability to petition state government through the normal way like we did with the MRTMA, because you just can't collect petition signatures during a COVID quarantine period. Some of the local advocacy that we did over the years was hampered because city council meetings are canceled or things are changed to electronic format, which is not always available to people outside of city limits. So it's been difficult to continue to fight the fight. But if you got it in you, if you got fight in you, there's still lots of places you can go to swing your fist when it comes to cannabis law reform. And I know everybody on this call, you are people that have been in the ring fighting for your own independence, fighting for your brothers and sisters. Even our local battles to get the right to have businesses within a certain city limits. Those are battles that benefit other people as well as yourselves. So every time we suit up, we do good, and that's important as a group. The other thing is, I like to refer to folks who use cannabis as ambassadors of cannabis. Everywhere you go, you are representing who we are. When you have bad examples of behavior, people remember those. And when people say things that are incorrect about cannabis, we fix that. We politely and nicely tell them the truth about what's going on, prove it with our facts, and then we walk away knowing that we've changed somebody's mind. So everywhere we go, we are doing advocacy, regardless of the coronavirus and regardless of whether we're a business person or just a consumer. And I think that's the beauty of the cannabis industry, because I don't see that kind of love in any other business. Everybody else, it's just 9 to 5, but with us, it's a passion. And I hope that persists for decades, man. I hope we never lose the fire that we get every morning when we go to the work. You know, you pull into your cultivation center, that first whiff of your garden. Come on. Come on. People don't get that in Wall Street. People don't get that like Ryan did selling insurance.
No, they don't.
Not there.
No, they don't. And that's awesome, Rick. And that's positive. I wanted to kind of, you know, excited to hear from you. What's next for you? What do you see yourself in 3 to 5 years? You got a lot of projects, but you got any big goals that you can reveal here?
I've started to franchise out the cannabis news segment. I now perform the cannabis news on a couple of different podcasts, and that's something that's becoming lucrative. I've always been known as a cannabis newsman, whether reporting on it, whether being featured in news articles, or whether running magazines. So it's a natural for me, and it builds on my existing support base, my follower base. So I think taking the news to different heights is probably where I'm going to head. Perhaps broadcast radio, perhaps even television or cable news. Why not? It's an opportunity. There's opportunity everywhere. And I think nowadays, having a reputation built up over a decade is significant, because there's an awful lot of people that have been here for about 10 minutes, not 10 years, trying to grab a piece of attention.
Hey, Rick, it's Kevin Pybus over at True Cannabis. You know, we've known each other for quite a long time. Every time I would go to a Senate hearing, a city council meeting, a marijuana conference, any of these advocacy groups, you were always there. I can't thank you enough for being our voice when we were not able to speak up out of fear of being discriminated against during the application process. I truly, honestly believe that the progress that we made would not have been made without Rick Thompson. Without having someone that was well-spoken, professional, educated, presentable, credible, somebody who could answer their questions, somebody who had an answer to everything, this just would not have happened without you. I can't thank you enough. Another thing that people may not know about you is, if you don't have enough going on already, you grew up in the Flint area, and you donate food, you make meals for the homeless in Flint. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, unfortunately, due to Corona, the Flint City Health Department has asked us not to do that. So we haven't been serving for several months, but for about 2 years prior, I was part of a group called Flint City Pop-Up Help Tent. And essentially what we did was go to a lot on Flint's east side, set up some folding tables, and bring out food that was created at their particular home and fed all of the people that were around. Now, in the east side, there's not any, you know, truly homeless, but there are a lot of folks that are underserved and underutilized in those communities. And to be honest with you, my job is just to go there and yell. I have a really, really loud voice, and I would yell, you know, free hot food, and draw people in from the neighborhood to let them know. The sad thing is that we would run out of food in about 15, 20 minutes, and you'd usually have people trickling in at 25 and 30 minutes, and you never had enough. There was always more need, even in the rain, in the snow. I stood on snowbanks shouting, and people would bundle up and walk in there wrapped in just blankets to try and get a hot meal. That's how bad people need stuff. And that's, you know, we talk about smaller government, and I agree we should have smaller government in some places, but what we do for our own fellow human beings is not enough. And the kids, it's the kids that, make you cry.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more, Rick. You know, we were just talking to Q last week about, social equity and how we can help each other out. And this is, you know, I think that there is a lot of empathy in the marijuana community. I think that we do care about each other. And I think that that eventually will somehow make social equity work and find a way to tie this all together. But again, you know, I commend you for your work as being an advocate for the marijuana community. And I commend you for your work that you do. It's just being a good citizen and helping out your fellow brother.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Rick, I got one more question for you. I mean, you're a well-traveled individual. Everyone's had a little bit of experience. And I mean, our experiences together started out even in Flint that we just got done talking about. But you've traveled the state high and low. And I guess one question that I've always been curious to ask you is what's keeping you up at night?
The fact that federal legalization hasn't happened yet, and because of that, people can still use that as an excuse to do horrible things to our folks. All of the stuff that we've accomplished, wonderful. And as a group, as a unit, we've done great things. But there's still a lot of people out there that don't have what we have. And even in our own state, there are people that don't get what we get. And as a Flint resident, my biggest fear was that they would forget about us. And they did. And it still bothers me. And we can't get what we need. And I worried my cannabis brothers and sisters are in the same kind of harm's way. And because of the stigma against cannabis, no one will talk about it. And that some of us will have riches while others have rags. And we have the ability to fix that. And why wouldn't we?
Yeah, I echo that sympathy there. I think that's why we probably all resonate towards the industry is we've had to kind of band together. We do carry this chip on our shoulder. And as you said, it's not a job, it's a calling. And just like the Flint water crisis, we've had to shoulder the burden for one another. I've had people pay my electric bill in times when I was trying to get my business off the ground. And it's a very communal activity. And to see large scale governments, you know, trying to turn a blind eye until it becomes appeasing financially is something that's it's distressing at best. And so I know we've got that political article that dropped off there. That's one of the last things I wanted to talk about is people are starting to tease federal legalization. Do you think that that's just a news blip, or do you think there's actually some teeth into that?
We haven't seen any reason to believe the Senate is likely to advance cannabis law reform. So in 2020, unless it comes through presidential decree, which doesn't seem likely either, we're not going to get where we want to be with cannabis this particular legislative session. The most important thing people can do is replace legislators that aren't responsive to the cannabis agenda. And we have an opportunity to do that this November. No matter who you believe is going to advance the cannabis agenda, I hope that you consider those folks at the top of your list of people to vote for. Should we have the same constitution of the legislature in 2021 and 2022, it'll be another 2 years of nothing. Because, you know, this year the stopper is Mitch McConnell. In previous years, we had a stopper in the House of Representatives. That one guy can control which bills come up and which bills sit and rot. And that guy just doesn't happen to like cannabis at all. So we need some change, not just in Mitch McConnell's, you know, home district, but also in the entire federal representation. I believe that we have a more friendly cannabis group with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. Neither of them would have been my pick for president or vice president, but they are people that are available on the ballot. And based on what I've seen from Mike Pence and from Donald Trump, I just don't have any belief whatsoever that they'll advance cannabis causes. We've even heard things from their particular primary people, some of their leaders in their group, about how cannabis has to remain federally illegal. I'm just, you know, most politics is local, but when it comes to really getting what we need to emancipate the people from the yoke of federal cannabis illegality, we need change on a national level. And that only has one pathway. That's through the legislature.
Yeah, that's It's a great response, Rick. You know, we could, it sounds like us just hanging out, talking cannabis, which we do all the time, but I know there are some hard deadlines, so I'm going to, you know, wrap it up, ask each one of my co-hosts any final thoughts than yourself, and, you know, wish you well. So, Tom, over at Realleaf, any final thoughts?
No, it's just great to hear you, Rick. Anytime you want to come up and rap, I love to hear what you have to say. Just like Kevin was saying, thank you so much for being there for the community and being a voice where sometimes people feel voiceless or become too busy to even think about what they should be saying. So thank you.
Appreciate it.
Kevin, what about you?
I just want to echo what Tom says. Whenever that boat's available, I'm ready to roll.
Nice. Gonna have to do it before October hits, so. But Sam, what's any final thoughts?
Rick, thank you for the time. As all of us are kind of we're involved in this rat race, you're focusing on some pretty hefty issues. So thanks for keeping your head up in the clouds and fighting for all of us here in the long-term agenda. We appreciate you on the show, and as always, I appreciate the wisdom. So thank you.
Rick, final thoughts.
Well, I think our community is bettered when you have greater number of methods of communication. Our community is bettered. We need more communication between the people that are getting things done and the people that are wondering what's going on. That's true not just of the cannabis industry, but of America in general. I think this is a great podcast. I hope you have a very long history. I've got I've done over 500 podcasts in my lifetime, and I never get tired of it. I hope you never tire of doing this. And thank you to all of you folks on this broadcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on, Rick. And yeah, but I forgot to mention that you're one of the original Michigan podfathers when it comes to cannabis. Been going for almost 10 years now. So thanks for the kind words. And, you know, just having Rick on reminds me, and we heard a lot of echoing again, that, you know, cannabis is the most miraculous plant that we've ever known in the universe. And it's been coming out of being illegal for 90 years. And what does that look like? What does that mean? It's starting to look like Michigan. It's not going to be just a commodity. I think we're beating that trend. And a lot of that is because of that plant, what it means. And then you heard everyone on here talking about how can we help other people? How can we help other people? You don't hear a lot of that right now in other aspects of business with people, in my opinion, really, really meaning it. So thanks again, Rick. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
The Smoke and Rope Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.